Welcome to Nick's podcast, The Insanity of God. We pray that God will bless you in what you're about to hear.
The man I told you about walking down the street in front of me that thought that volunteers should be killed before career personnel. He was in charge of a number of these feeding sites, and you can't imagine. Now you're 340 pounds of weight, and it's 120 degrees out there, and you're losing about 20 pounds a day, and you're sweating, you're hot, and you're watching. Here's the deal. You're at the feeding site about 5 o'clock in the morning, and if the U.S. military or the Nepalese or the Egyptians, if they don't show up on time to protect the feeding site, or the food doesn't get there, 5 tons of animal corn, you know, the hard corn or dirty wheat that our farmers can't use, and so our government buys to give to starving Somalis. Food that maybe our animals would eat, maybe they wouldn't eat. And you have about a mile of razor wire coming out of the compound, and people are strung out, you know, for that mile or so, about 5,000 of them. And so you meet the military there, you meet the UN trucks there, you have your Somali workers with cans, and Somalis would line up for hours with a plastic bag or something, and you would dump 2 kgs, about 4 or 5 pounds of dirty wheat or horse corn into that bag, and they just come in, you dump, you come in and dump. It's just doing that. So Obama is responsible for making sure that runs okay, that 5,000 people are fed every morning. And it was just one of those hottest coastal African days, and he's sweating bullets. I mean, it's running like a river off of him, and the U.S. Army was protecting the site, and you know, it's almost too hot to touch your Humvee or to hold your weapons, and the people are coming in and going out. They're coming in and they're going out. And finally, this one old lady had had enough. She's tired of this horse food. She's tired of this dirty wheat that we're giving them. And she breaks every rule of this feeding site when she gets her dirty wheat in her plastic bag. And she walks out of the barbed wire. Instead of leaving the feeding site, she comes and she walks up to this giant of the man, and she begins to curse him in Somali. And the site got quiet. The U.S. military got interested in a hurry because she called him everything but something polite. If she had talked that way to any Somali man, probably the least they would have done to her is smack her, but more than likely beat her. But, you know, of course, our worker, he speaks no Somali, so he's just got this big grin on his face, you know, just sort of like Gomer Pyle on the old Andy Griffin show. And she's just cussing him and Somali, and he's just smiling and smiling. And she realizes we have a failure to communicate. And so she sets her dirty bag of wheat down on the ground, and she gets two hands full of it, and she throws it in his face. And it sticks in his nose and his mouth and his ears and his eyebrows, and it's just like wallpaper on his sweat. And I'm telling you what, that place went quiet, and all you heard was as the soldiers locked their weapons. And I thought, oh, my goodness. Now, I really probably thought something different but there's no baptized words that I could, you know, use on an open interview like this. But I thought, oh my, Bum's hands are about this big. Her neck's about that big. She looked like she was, you know, 90 years of age, and she had creases in her face that was deep enough to plant corn in. I mean, she was so wrinkled and dried up and used up. I mean, she had nothing left. And I thought, he's just going to reach out. He's hot. He's angry. He's here giving him his vacation time. She's just insulted him in front of just hundreds of people. And he's just going to reach out with that meaty hand and just snap her neck like a chicken bone. And the whole place is just paralyzed. And Bum was just quiet for a moment. And he looked at her, and he smiled, and he started to sing to her. And he sang an old Elvis Presley song, "You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog." And he sang that whole hound dog song to her. And she realized that, you know, she wasn't going to win this one. And she stomped off. And the U.S. military was just dying laughing. They had laid their guns down. They were leaning on their vehicles. And it was just, to me, it was one of the most strongest times in my life that I saw somebody represent Jesus in a moment of violence. That when this guy had been so embarrassed and so humiliated, and he turned it into, for me, even though it was an Elvis Presley song, that he sang to this old woman, and he not only neutralized the danger, he turned it into something that was very humorous and something that was a witness to people around. Matter of fact, about 6 or 8 Somali guys came up to him later and said, "We didn't know you could sing." He said, "Well, I'm a famous singer." He says, "Back in America, they don't know me as Bum. Back in America, they know me as Elvis Presley." And when he got back to America, he took an Elvis Presley tape and he taped his name and his picture over the cover, and he sent it back to these guys in Somalia. And so these guys in Somalia still believe that Elvis Presley is alive in North Carolina. Just insanity on one hand, death on the other, all this stuff mixed together. And it was probably 2 or 3 weeks later when about a 13-year-old boy walks in the feeding site. He's not walking between the barbed wire, and it looks like he's got a stick. And as he got closer, I could see he has a gun hanging down his leg like an old AK-47. And almost the instant I saw it, the lieutenant saw it and said, "Son, drop your weapon." And the kid just kept walking toward the military. And a number of them said, "Son, drop your weapon." And as he walked closer, he began to raise his weapon in the middle of that feeding site. And one of the military shot him in the chest and killed him with one shot. And he fell dead at Bum's feet. And Bum looked down there at this wasted kid and this wasted life, and big fat tears just began to roll down his face. And it wasn't until that moment, I mean, when that kid was shot, nobody said, "Oh my God, a kid's been shot." Nobody said, "Oh, get help." No one rushed to see if he needed medical care. It wasn't until Bum began to cry that Somali men rushed up to him and said, "Stop your crying. You're embarrassing us. Men don't cry in public. This kid was stupid. If he wanted to kill some of these soldiers, he should have hid in the rubble. He deserved to die. He was an idiot. Stop your crying. Men don't cry over stuff like this." And Bum began to sob deep in his chest as he looked down on this lifeless body. And he told me later in the day, he says, it was as if all of the lostness of creation was in that one event for him. If Jesus is not the answer, there is no answer. And I tried the military thing and had a wonderful partnership. And I tried the United Nations thing and feed the hungry and clothe the naked and do it. And watching them do it, $4 billion worth of that, separate it from anything that's spiritual. And I've watched what militaries and governments and United Nations do. And by 1997, when they were forcing us out of Somalia, it was as if I had to say, nothing works. None of this works. And there were part of my heart that I had given to government, and part of my heart that I had trusted in military, and part of my being believed that the United Nations had a really positive role to play in the eternal realm. And I lost all my heresy in Somalia. But probably what was the toughest for me, and it's hard for me to share, is that by then, I really knew the Bible from cover to cover. And I had spouted words from the Bible as if they were true, having never been experienced. And one of my favorite verses is, "Greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world." And yet I never could see evidence of that in Somalia.
Thanks for listening. If you want to know more about our ministry, just go to nickripkin.com.